This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. You can find our show wherever you get your podcasts. This story is from our episode about online mental health services. Megan Codis-Bodhi was considering medication for her ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and for that, she needed an official diagnosis. That part was so complicated, it felt like she was starring in her own circus act.
You set up all these hoops, and then you add hoops, and then you set the hoops on fire, and then right at the end, you move the last hoop before I can even jump through it.
Megan took test after test, she scheduled appointment after appointment, and she had to wait for her insurance company to greenlight things every step of the way.
It is sort of invalidating to have to go through this much rigorous testing. It's not like I'm seeking a heart medication or some kind of really severe thing. I mean, this is a severe thing. It's hard to function in life just executing everyday tasks, but this is ADHD. I just feel like it didn't have to be like this.
This is a frustration many people with ADHD have experienced. But then, during the pandemic, a much faster path to diagnosis popped up with online assessments. They promised convenience and easy access, but now critics say these sites are making things too easy and that they're causing overprescription of ADHD medications. Nicole Curry looked into what's going on and how we got here.
If you want to understand the present, you need to know the past.
Let me give you a little bit of a historical narrative from my perspective on ADHD.
More than a decade ago, doctors were becoming very comfortable with diagnosing ADHD in children and adults. And the typical medication that they prescribed to ease the symptoms was Adderall, a stimulant. But there was one problem.
Adderall is one molecule away from meth. You know, from crystal meth, a pretty potent drug.
That blue and sometimes orange pill comes with the risk of abuse and addiction. A few things started to happen. Patients began asking for higher doses, showing signs of addiction. Adderall became known as the college campus study drug. The number of people who used Adderall exploded. And by 2011, the Food and Drug Administration announced a shortage of the medication, which derailed the lives of those who really needed it. This chain of events led to increased scrutiny and investigations.
So if you were a doctor who was prescribing Adderall, you were putting yourself on a list of people that the feds could come knocking and say, well, what made you decide to medicate this person?
Sanam Hafiz is telling me this story. She is a neuropsychologist in New York City, and she has been diagnosing ADHD for more than 20 years. Sanam says that health officials were looking for signs of excessive prescribing.
So then what I saw was a tidal wave of neurologists and psychiatrists sending people to me and saying, get a proper diagnosis so I can basically cover my butt, you know, I can cover my rear end.
Everyone, doctors, insurance companies, they now all wanted to make sure a diagnosis wasn't a miss. Psychologists like Sanam were completing additional evaluations for physicians who thought a patient had ADHD. And their process could be long and more involved. Patients often had to take multiple tests, go to therapy, talk about their childhood. Sometimes they even had to have a friend or family member vouch for them. Sort of tell the healthcare provider, yeah, they've been like this all of their life.
So adults will tell me, you know, it took me 10 years to finish a bachelor's degree. Or I knew I was brighter or more capable than the jobs I always got. I couldn't stay at a job. I had, you know, friends or relationships that fell apart because I couldn't really pull it together for different reasons.
Sanam says overall, this more involved process was a good thing. Because psychologists like herself were able to really investigate and weed out other conditions, like a learning disability.
Is it a reading issue? Is it a comprehension issue? Or is it that you just can't focus long enough to comprehend or register what you're reading? Just because you take longer to do things doesn't always mean that you have ADHD.
It could take time. but Sanam felt it was necessary to get things right.
But at least they could say to someone coming in to see them that, you know, that you actually had an evaluation.
And then 9 years after that 2011 Adderall shortage, the pandemic happened.
And then came COVID, and then came the online platforms.
Sanam is talking about online platforms like Cerebral or Done, and many more that began advertising their websites on social media platforms like TikTok during the pandemic. They used catchy slogans to target people who had trouble concentrating.
Focusing better, better time management, less anxiety, get affordable ADHD treatment.
ADHD is complicated, but getting help shouldn't be.
Or who maybe had another condition like obesity.
Those who live by impulse, eat by impulse. Obesity is 5 times more prevalent among adults with ADHD.
These sites sort of felt like deja vu for Sanam.
And we're back there again. So we've seen this before.
Getting an ADHD diagnosis was now easier than ever.
While I think it's amazing that people have access to, you know, mental health on this platform, and especially during COVID, where people couldn't just go in and see a doctor, and people were working remote hours and all this stuff. But there is no way you can really assess ADHD by an online screening tool.
The sites generally work like this. Patients fill out a self-reported assessment and sometimes chat with the provider depending on the site. The provider then reviews that assessment and draws up a treatment plan. Treatment can include therapy and a prescription for a stimulant like Adderall. These sites said that they followed careful procedures and worked with providers that were well-versed in the ADHD field. And at first, it seemed like they were doing a due diligence while creating an accessible path to diagnosis and medication. But soon, providers like Sanam noticed the number of adults requesting ADHD care had exploded.
The number of people that come to me because they saw a TikTok on autism or ADHD has tripled. The number of people who are on medication or diagnosed from an online platform has tripled.
And some people believe that eventually led to another issue.
There is a national shortage of the drug Adderall, which is used to treat attention deficit disorders. Manufacturing delays, low supply, and rising demand has left those who rely on the drug every day unsure about how or when they will be able to...
And this is why the FDA knows that the online platforms like Cerebral are primarily responsible for this shortage.
Another Adderall shortage. This one started last October. Many people focused on one of the three reasons for the shortage, the increase in demand. Some blamed the telehealth websites. Pharmacists like CVS and Walmart turned away anyone with a Done or Cerebral prescription. News stories implied that many of these sites followed a model prioritizing profits over healthcare, charging patients a monthly fee to continue treatment. And the Department of Justice launched an investigation into Cerebral last year for advertising quick prescriptions for Adderall and Xanax. Soon, these sites began to fade into the dark past of bad pandemic decisions. And Cerebral has stopped prescribing controlled substances like Adderall to new patients. So how did history end up repeating itself? Is an online diagnosis for ADHD just a bad idea, especially for adults who report their own symptoms? Is it something that inevitably leads to overdiagnosis, misdiagnosis, and overprescribing? This is where the story gets complicated, because the issues go deeper. First of all, many people can get a quick diagnosis from an in-person provider, like Alex Wild, who lives in Florida.
I just went to my primary care physician and told him, some specific symptoms that I experienced and that I felt, you know, pretty strongly that this was an appropriate diagnosis, and he wrote me a prescription.
Alex was diagnosed that day after only one conversation with his doctor. He doesn't remember the exact time of their talk, but he says it was long. And Alex knows his process was shorter than most. He doesn't know exactly why, but he guesses it was because he wasn't too interested in a high dosage of Adderall.
There may be other people in different circumstances who have trouble, like if they've had bad addiction issues in the past, could see why people might be a little more hesitant and want to make, you know, go through a little more rigorous testing before.
So what is the best or standard procedure to diagnose ADHD in adults? It turns out answering that question depends on who you're asking. Diagnosing adult ADHD is quite vague.
I think part of the problem has been there hasn't been an explicit set of guidelines or requirements for what people are supposed to follow when diagnosing and treating ADHD in adults. And because of that, it's been kind of like whatever people want to do.
That's Maggie Sibley. She's a researcher at Seattle's Children's Hospital. Maggie says that there are no official guidelines from any official practice organization in the U.S. on how to diagnose ADHD in adults.
So you got a good set of guidelines in Europe adopted by the European nations. Canadians have it. Australians have it. There's one in Asia. But for some reason, the United States hasn't done that yet.
There are official guidelines on how to diagnose ADHD in children.
But we're at a pretty clear consensus across the professional community that the manifestations of ADHD in adulthood are unique and need to be researched separately from childhood and adolescent manifestations of ADHD.
The only resource for adults is in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or the DSM-5. It lists the requirements for having ADHD in adulthood, but the requirements are basically the symptoms, not being able to focus or having trouble completing a task.
Only 4% of people who screen positive for symptoms on a checklist like that end up having ADHD. That's the key point here, is that those checklists just tell you whether to you should investigate ADHD in the person. They don't tell you if the person has ADHD.
An official set of guidelines will show providers how to evaluate someone for ADHD, how many tests should one take, and when to start ruling out other conditions, stuff that could span over several appointments.
Some of the things the guideline needs to figure out, for example, is how do you ask those questions? Should you ask those questions to the person themselves versus a family member? Should you do it on a paper and pencil rating scale versus a long interview? Should you have a requirement to get a childhood history from a person versus not? So there's a lot of nuts and bolts to exactly how to do it right.
Some ADHD-friendly websites and smaller healthcare systems have their own set of guidelines based on years of ADHD research, but their advice is not a general rule of thumb. Without an official set of guidelines, providers will often make their diagnosis at their own discretion.
If I'm investigating ADHD in a 48-year-old woman who's coming in for the first time having trouble concentrating, we need to find out what role does aging have in that and menopause, right? Because the cognitive effects of menopause look a lot like ADHD. And in that case, it could be something hormonal that needs to be addressed and not a stimulant medication.
Maggie says these steps may be too costly and time-consuming for online platforms.
The companies that we're describing here, they don't have people like that in-house to do that kind of comprehensive care and really rule those things out. In a big hospital system, we do, right? We can send them, you know, to get a physical exam or go to an endocrinologist and get their thyroid looked at.
Maggie is working on a task force with the American Professional Society of ADHD and Related Disorders to create a set of guidelines and best practices, and that's for in-person and online providers. She says the guidelines will take anywhere from 10 months to a year to finish, but Maggie says it's all worth it.
A lot of us are very pro-telemedicine. We think that's the future, but it should be done in a way that's compatible with best practices in health. That's all that people are asking for. So it just raises questions when there are models that incentivize providers to not follow best practices. That's why this is like such a big deal.
For The Pulse, I'm Nicole Curry.